Welcome to Base by Base. Okay, let's unpack this. We're looking at a really complex health challenge, COVID-19, but through a very specific and crucial lens, patients with end-stage kidney disease, or ESKD. Now, for many of us, the pandemic might feel like it's receding a bit in the rearview mirror, but you know, for vulnerable populations, understanding exactly how their bodies fought or sometimes struggled to fight this virus is still absolutely vital. We're going to really try and understand the unique immune responses in this specific group today, and hopefully reveal some insights that could reshape how we approach future health crises.
Yeah, and what's truly fascinating here is how some really cutting-edge research has taken us deep inside the immune system, right down to the level of individual cells, to reveal some crucial differences in responses. Our insights today, they're mostly drawn from a pretty groundbreaking multi-omics study. It's titled Temporal Multi-omics Analysis of COVID-19 in End-Stage Kidney Disease, and it was published in Cell Genomics back in August 2025. This incredibly comprehensive work was led by Dr. Stevenson and her colleagues. So our mission today really is to cut through some of that complexity in their findings and pull out the most vital insights, especially, you know, for these ESKD patients who face such unique and severe challenges when they encounter a virus like SARS-CoV-2.
Right. And you might be wondering, why focus specifically on ESKD patients? I mean, what makes this group so critical to study?
Well, it turns out these patients are in a uniquely challenging position when it comes to fighting off viruses like SARS-CoV-2. The statistics are quite stark, actually. ESKD is one of the strongest risk factors we know for severe COVID-19. I think there was a UK study, for instance, that estimated a hazard ratio for death of 3.7, which means these patients were nearly four times more likely to die from COVID-19 compared to the general population. It's huge. And it's a bit of a puzzle, isn't it? Because, well, we know ESKD is linked with increased susceptibility to infection generally and often impaired responses to vaccines, too. But at the same time, it's also characterized by this state of chronic sort of low-grade inflammation throughout the body.
Exactly. It's almost a paradox.
Yeah.
And that paradox, it really leads us to the crucial question the study aimed to answer. Do ESKD patients actually mount a distinct immunological response to SARS-CoV-2? Is that what drives their heightened susceptibility to severe disease? You know, what exactly is happening at the cellular level that's different? And maybe just a practical note, one thing that helped enable this research was the fact that ESKD patients often have regular hemodialysis.
Ah, right.
Which provided this opportunity for serial sample collection. So researchers could track changes over time within the same person. That's incredibly powerful data.
Okay, so this is where the detective work really gets interesting. How did they even begin to unravel such a complex question? At a cellular level, I mean, you mentioned multi-omics. It sounds like they weren't just looking at one thing, but like multiple layers of information from individual cells, almost like a microscopic crime scene investigation unit.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. They used multi-omics at single cell resolution. So think of multi-omics as combining several omes, like the transcriptome, which is all the gene activity, and maybe parts of the proteome, like surface proteins. Specifically, they use something called CISEC, cellular indexing of transcriptomes and epitopes by sequencing. That looks at both gene expression and surface proteins on single cells. And they paired this with TCR-seq and BCR-seq, T-cell and B-cell receptor sequencing, which, as you said, is like reading the unique ID badges of these immune cells to figure out their specific jobs in the fight.
Wow. Okay. Very detailed.
Very. And the scale and design of the study were impressive too. They had two distinct cohorts. The first was the 2020 cohort, 21 patients from that initial pandemic wave, representing a range of COVID-19 severity. Then a really unique 2021 cohort of 16 patients. And what made them so valuable was that for most of these individuals, the researchers actually had pre-infection samples available.
Oh, wow. Okay. So before they even got sick.
Exactly.
Which allowed for a true intra-individual comparison, meaning they could compare a patient's immune state to themselves before and during infection. Not just comparing different groups of people, they also collected convalescent samples, you know, to track recovery. And connecting this to the bigger picture, having those pre-infection samples from the same individuals, well, that's just a game changer for understanding personalized immune responses. In total, they generated data from something like 580,000 high-quality cells across 187 samples from 61 patients. It's a massive data set to explore.
Absolutely huge. So with all that incredible data, What were some of the first things they noticed, like the broad changes in the immune cell makeup of these ESKD patients during COVID-19? What did the big picture show initially?
Well, they definitely found some significant shifts in the overall immune landscape. In the first week of infection, for instance, there was a noticeable increase in naive CD8 plus T cells and also naive B cells, sort of the fresh recruits coming in. And more generally, antibody secreting B cells, BASCs, which are, you know, crucial for producing antibodies, they significantly increased in both week one and week two.
Okay, so that sounds like the adaptive immune system kicking into gear, right?
Exactly what you'd expect, yeah. On the flip side, though, they saw decreases in certain other cell types, like MAIT cells, which are a kind of T cell, and some memory T cell subsets. Now, this might be because these cells were actually leaving the bloodstream, migrating into infected tissues, like the lungs, perhaps, to fight the virus directly, so they weren't being picked up as much in the blood samples.
I see. And when they drilled down deeper, looking at the specific genes being turned on or off within those cells, what did that reveal?
Right. So diving into the transcriptomics, the gene activity, a really prominent finding was the widespread enrichment of interferon response pathways. Think of these as the body's early warning system, signaling an antiviral state. This was seen across many immune cell types, especially in the 2020 cohort. Interestingly, B cells showed the most enrichment, something like over 240 pathways activated in them, many related to cell division and DNA repair, which suggests, you know, a strong proliferative response as they gear up to make antibodies.
Okay.
But then there was this surprising finding, too, a downregulation of something called the orexin receptor pathway. This was seen in monocytes, dendritic cells, and NK cells. This pathway is sort of involved in how cells manage internal stress. So seeing it downregulated during a viral attack, well, it suggests a really complex, maybe even a slightly dysfunctional way these cells were trying to cope. It's not just about turning up all the defenses.
Huh. That is surprising. Getting down to how individual cells manage stress is, well, incredibly detailed.
Okay, so they identified these general immune shifts, but what about the differences between patients who had mild or moderate COVID versus those who got really sick, severe, critical illness within this ESKD group? Did the immune response look different? What made it worse for some?
Yeah, they definitely looked at that, and they found that patients with severe or critical COVID-19 actually had an increased proportion of those antibody-secreting B cells we mentioned earlier, suggesting maybe a more robust, perhaps even excessive antibody production in the severe cases.
More isn't always better than. Potentially, yes. And at the gene level, particularly in monocytes, there were some really significant changes in severe disease. They saw a downregulation of key HLA genes. These are the genes responsible for presenting bits of the virus to other immune cells, like showing the enemy's flag. So downregulation implies their ability to signal the threat might have been reduced. And this was accompanied by an upregulation of several markers we often see in severe inflammation, things like CD163 and proteins from the S100 family, S100A8, A9, A12, and another called MCEMP1.
Okay, so that sounds concerning, a reduced ability to, like, present the virus, but combined with more inflammatory markers kicking off. But you mentioned something counterintuitive earlier. They looked at a really key inflammatory signal, TNF-alpha. What was the story there? Because that seems like it should be higher in severe cases, right?
Right, and this is where the multi-omics approach really shines. It highlights why looking at just one thing can be misleading. They observed this kind of disconnect. The actual gene expression of TNF, the gene that codes for TNF-alpha, was actually lower in monocytes from the severe and critical patients.
Lower. Okay, that is counterintuitive.
It is, because as you say, TNF-alpha is this classic pro-inflammatory cytokine, usually linked to severe inflammation. However, when they looked at the actual TNF-alpha protein levels floating around in the blood plasma from the same patients, those levels were significantly higher in the severe cases.
Ah, so the gene inside the cell is less active, but the protein outside the cell is higher.
Precisely. This uncoupling, as they called it, it suggests something complex is going on. Maybe negative feedback loops inside the monocytes trying to shut down production.
Yeah.
Or perhaps other cell types beyond the circulating monocytes they measured were actually pumping out most of that TNF-alpha protein into the blood. It's a powerful reminder that the body's response is a whole system event. You really need these multiple layers of data, the gene activity and the protein levels, to start understanding the nuances.
Fascinating. And speaking of ruling things out, this study also looked at a gene called PLAC8, right? Didn't earlier work suggest it might make cells more vulnerable?
That's right. There was some prior suggestion that PLAC8 might increase susceptibility of lung cells to SARS-CoV-2 infection. But this study, because they had those unique pre-infection samples and could use a clever statistical technique called Mendelian randomization, they actually found no evidence that PLAC played a causal role in COVID-19 severity, at least not specifically in these ESKD patients. So that helps refine our understanding, it seems, PLA-C8 isn't the driver of severity in this context.
Okay, ruling out a potential culprit. Good to know. Now let's shift gears a bit to the adaptive immune response, specifically T cells. They're crucial fighters, right? How did the study track what they were doing over time?
Yes, T cells are absolutely key. And the longitudinal nature of this study, tracking patients over time, let them really watch the clonal expansion of T cells, like watching specific teams of soldiers multiply. They found that the fastest expanding clones, especially those T cells that really ramped up their numbers right after a positive PCR test, were significantly enriched in T cell receptors, the TCRs known to be specific for SARS-CoV-2.
So if I'm hearing this right, it means the immune system is actively recruiting and expanding these like specialized T cell squads specifically to fight this virus.
Yeah.
And they could actually see these specific squads emerging over time.
That's exactly it. They could essentially confirm that these expanding cells were indeed the ones responding directly to the virus. Really elegant confirmation.
That's incredible. And then they found something even more surprising, didn't they? Something about public TCR motifs. What on earth are those?
Right. This was another really cool finding. These public TCR motifs, think of them as shared T cell receptor patterns, basically groups of very similar T cell clonotypes that were found across multiple different patients in the study.
Shared between different people.
Yeah, which suggests a strong selective pressure from the virus itself. It's pushing the immune systems of different people to generate common, presumably effective, T-cell responses to fight it. And what was even more telling is that they deduced these shared TCR motifs were likely MHC class 2 restricted.
Okay, what does that mean in practice?
It means they're primarily recognized by CD4 plus T cells. These are often called helper T cells because they play a crucial role in coordinating the overall immune response, helping B cells make antibodies, activating killer T cells, and so on. For instance, they found that a specific HLA allele, HLA-LA-DPA by ARO1.03, was shared among the patients who displayed one particular shared motif. It pins down the interaction. They also noted that T cells belonging to these shared motifs showed signs of being stimulated by interferons, again, indicating they were actively engaged in the antiviral fight.
Wow. So common battle plans emerging across different patients.
Kind of, yeah. And finding these public T cell responses, especially figuring out their likely MHC restriction, is a huge step forward in understanding shared immunity, even across diverse patient populations like those with ESKD. One more point on the T cells. They also saw that these highly activated T cells were quite transient. They tended to peak around 10 to 14 days after exposure and then mostly return towards baseline levels in the convalescent samples when patients were recovering.
Okay, so a dynamic rise and fall. Now, this next part feels really practical, looking at the impact of a common treatment. Because by the time the 2021 cohort was recruited, treatment had changed, right? Using glucocorticoids, like dexamethasone, had become standard for severe COVID-19 in the UK.
Exactly. Dexamethasone had been shown to significantly reduce mortality in severe cases, so it became standard care. And this study provided this really remarkable single-cell snapshot of its effects. They observed the emergence of a distinct population of monocytes, they termed dexamethasone-related monocytes, or dexmonos for short.
Dexmonos, okay.
What's fascinating here is that these dexmonos emerged only in the 2021 cohort, precisely when glucocorticoid therapy became standard. They just weren't seen in the 2020 cohort, or in any of the mild or moderate cases who wouldn't typically receive steroids.
So a clear link to the treatment. What do these dexmonos look like transcriptionally?
They had a very distinct cellular fingerprint. Lower expression of inflammatory marker genes like JUN and CXCL8. Also lower expression of those HLA genes involved in antigen presentation, suggesting the drug might dampen that immune signaling. But conversely, they showed higher expression of genes linked to anti-inflammatory actions, things like CD163 again, but also ADAMTS2, MFGE8, MRC1 genes involved in things like antioxidation, cell migration, and phagocytosis, which is like cell cleanup. This whole profile strongly paralleled what are known as M2-like macrophages. These are immune cells known for their roles in suppressing inflammation and helping resolve it.
So the drug seems to be pushing monocytes towards a more resolving, less inflammatory state.
That seems to be the picture at the single cell level, yes. It really provides this incredibly granular view of how a widely used drug like dexamethasone profoundly reshapes immune cells in real time. And this has significant implications beyond just COVID-19, you know, for understanding the broader effects of corticosteroids on our immune system in various conditions.
Absolutely. Okay, now for maybe one of the biggest questions this study tackled. Taking everything together, is the immune response in ESKD patients fundamentally different from non-ESKD patients when fighting COVID-19, or is it more about their starting point?
Yeah, that's a crucial point. And the study was quite meticulous here. They integrated their data with two large external data sets from non-ESKD COVID-19 patients specifically for this comparison. And the key finding was quite revealing. They found an increase in signaling through the transforming growth factor beta pathway, TGF pathway, across pretty much all immune cell lineages in the ESKD patients, but here's the critical part. This elevated TGF signaling was present irrespective of their COVID-19 status.
Ah, so it was there even before infection. It's just part of having ESKD.
Exactly. It seems to be an inherent general feature of the immune system in ESKD. So the study concluded, and I'm quoting loosely here, that they did not observe any COVID-19 associated effects that were specific to ESKD, which raises a really important question for us. If the specific response to the COVID-19 virus itself isn't uniquely different in ESKD patients compared to others, then is it actually the baseline immune state characterized perhaps by this elevated TGF pathway and the chronic inflammation we talked about earlier that makes ESKD patients so vulnerable to severe outcomes when they encounter any significant infection, including SARS-CoV-2?
So it's like their immune system is starting the fight, already altered, maybe even handicapped, by the underlying kidney disease itself.
That seems to be the implication, yes. The underlying condition sets the stage for a potentially worse outcome, even if the steps the immune system takes once infected look broadly similar to others.
Okay, so what does this all mean for you, the listener? Well, this exploration really underscores the incredible power of these longitudinal, multi-omic studies. They let us truly understand dynamic immune responses in ways we couldn't before. We've gained some really powerful insights into precise cellular markers of COVID-19 severity in ESKD patients, the complex yet sometimes shared dance of T cells fighting the virus, and even the very specific single cell effects of common treatments like leukocorticoids. It means, you know, we're getting closer to understanding the immune system's intricate relationship with disease and, importantly, how underlying conditions like ESKD fundamentally reshape that relationship.
Absolutely. And while this study provides a really strong foundation, like all good research, it also points towards future directions. It's important to remember the data are observational. They show correlations like higher plasma TNF-alpha in severe disease, but not necessarily causation. We can't definitively say from this data alone that the TNF-alpha caused the severity. Also, the study primarily focused on peripheral blood. What's happening directly in the inflamed tissues, like the lungs, might be different. And while they compared to external data sets, it was primarily a single-center study for the core ESKD cohorts. So this leads us to wonder, you know, how can we build on this? How do we move from these detailed observations towards potential interventions? Future studies could maybe explore the actual functional properties of those steroid-induced dex monos in the lab, or use techniques to look directly at tissue-level inflammation in ESKD patients during infection.
Lots more to learn. But just think about how these insights, down to individual cell responses revealed by multi-omics, are genuinely paving the way for truly personalized medicine. It helps us think about tailoring treatments not just to a disease label, like COVID-19, but potentially to your unique biological response, shaped by your own underlying health conditions. Thank you for joining us for this exploration.
This episode is based on an open access article under the Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 International License, CC BY 4.0. You'll find the DOI and a link to the license in the episode description.